7 of Multiverse Musings, a DC Comics podcast. I'm your host, Adam, and with me, as always, is my co-host, Jordan. Jordan, how's your week been?
Hey, man, it's been great. I had a busy day today, but I got a chance to read my new comics today because we're recording on New Comic Book Day, so that always makes the day a little bit better. How about you, man?
I've had a pretty good week. I haven't gotten a chance to go to the comic store yet, probably either tomorrow or Friday, depending on how things shake out. But I'm looking forward to getting my reading in. And I'm excited about tonight because we have another guest. This seems to be a recurring theme now. Guests coming on. And we're going to be talking about a couple of animated movies, but we'll reveal those in our next segment. Right now, we're going to start, as always, with the news. And first up, we always like to start with movie news, so I'm not going to reinvent the wheel in that regard. And as we all know, there is a DC movie that is, as of this recording, is it 3 weeks away?
Let's see, the November 17th, I think when I checked this morning, it was like less than 25 days. Because, like I said, I always check BOF's countdown clock, and I think maybe it was 23 days or something like that.
Yeah, so it's about just shy of 3 weeks. Yeah, about 3 weeks and 2 days away from, so you're right, 23 days away from the release of Justice League. And because it's 3 weeks away, tickets have gone on sale in the U.S. I don't know about here in Canada as of yet. I haven't been able to grab mine yet, so they don't seem to be on sale here just yet. But in the U.S., they are available. And when the tickets become available, they tend to, if you go to the, what depends where you're buying them, Fandango or the specific theater's websites, they give you a runtime, and we now have a runtime for Justice League, and this is an official runtime, and it's clocking in at about 121 minutes, which is 2 hours and 1 minute. Of course, it seems like with everything DC on film related, controversy arises, and a couple of days before the tickets went on sale, someone that I think works in the film community, I don't want to rehash his name because the guy's been through enough on Twitter, but he works in the film community. He had discovered that the film was indeed 121 minutes before the tickets went on sale and it was officially posted. This poor guy was inundated with insults and even death threats by some extreme fanboys, I guess is the word you'd call them. Basically, extremists is more than anything, I think. And anyway, so he's getting death threats and hurled insults at because he said the film is 121 minutes. Now, I can understand people wanting the film to be longer, and that's your feeling, you're entitled to it. But there is no excuse to start insulting somebody, or especially issuing death threats, over a film's runtime. Like, to me, get a grip on reality. I don't like insulting people, but you're an insult. Like, I hate when these people do this because they're painting the rest of us DC film fans in a bad light. And I refuse to associate with you people. I'm not one of you. You're crazy.
You know what the most ridiculous part of it is? These people call themselves superhero fans. And just everything, throwing death threats at somebody goes against everything that, like, superheroes represent. It's like that. I mean, that's the irony of the whole thing. Is these people claim to be fans of these superheroes who represent, doing the right thing, and they're coming out after somebody over a film. First of all, I mean, that's what's ridiculous. But doing atrocious things online and throwing out death threats. That's ridiculous to call yourself a fan of superheroes and to be doing that.
You're acting more like a supervillain.
Yeah.
Or, matter of fact, I don't want to make light of the situation, but you're acting like a supervillain's henchman, because supervillains aren't stupid enough to get, usually, they have somebody else do their dirty work. They're not stupid enough to get their hands dirty. So, but it's ridiculous behavior, and it's got to stop. Like this kind of stuff needs to end. You know, just because you have access to spewing your opinion everywhere and anywhere online, you should show common sense and restraint. You know, back in the day it was think before you speak. Now it's think before you tweet, and I recommend our society do that, because, and again, most of fandom is really good, but you get these loud, brash morons who think, you know, they're keyboard warriors, they can say what they want, and it's just ridiculous. Nobody should feel insulted or threatened over anything, first of all, but especially over a film's runtime. And the crux of the issue for these you know, lunatics, Justin, Jordan, shit, I did it again. damn it.
Hey, did you hear, there was a recent episode where at the end, I said that you called me Justin. Yeah, you said you didn't call me Justin.
I caught myself. I apologize on that. you were correct. Don't get used to it. But anyway, the crux of the complaint for these morons is that, oh, the film is too short, and when are they going to have time to introduce this, all these characters, that, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, there are plenty of superhero movies that are a lesser length. I mean, sure, Man of Steel was rather, you know, a longer film. Batman vs. Superman was 2 hours and 45 minutes. Suicide Squad was, I think, what, 212, two something like that. And Wonder Woman was around 220, or in that ballpark anyway. I'm sure those are long, and they're great, and I like lengthy superhero movies. But don't tell me you can't get anything done in 2 hours and 2 minutes, or even if you add credits, you know, let's say an hour and 50 minutes, because you can. And there are examples of really good superhero movies that are in the ballpark of what Justice League is going to be. I'll throw out some examples. The first two Blade films were both under 2 hours. X-Men, the Bryan Singer's first X-Men, was an hour and 44 minutes. And they introduced the X-Men, the Brotherhood, and I never got a sense that it was too short. And that's just superhero movies.
And I'll throw another example in, which is, it's not a live action movie, but Justice League War, because this version of Justice League seems to be taking a lot of inspiration from Justice League Origins/Justice League War. Yeah. And that movie was only 75 minutes, I think, and it's the animated movie that introduced the Justice League. So,
yeah, and that's what I'm saying. I mean, it's been, there are lots of movies, especially in this genre, but also, here's another one, Guardians of the Galaxy, the first Guardians of the Galaxy. And they had a lot to introduce and managed to do it just fine. So, you know, I can't remember which Star Wars, but there was one, I think it was it might have been episode 6, I'm not 100% sure. But one of them for sure, for certain, was under 2 hours. And those films are beloved, so, and that had a lot of, obviously a lot of mythological things to deal with and pay off and set up, et cetera, et cetera. So it's at its base, before seeing the movie, it's a non-issue. Now, if the movie comes out and somebody feels, with a longer runtime, they could have explained this better, they could have dealt with this better, et cetera, et cetera, you're entitled to that opinion, but you'll discover that after seeing the movie.
Yeah, that's the thing. You got to reserve judgment on this until after the movie. I think it's to try and make too much out of this, so without even seeing the movie yet, I think it's premature. You know what I'm saying?
And even still, even if you have those issues once you've seen the film, that does not give you the right to go insult or hurl death threats at the guy who first reported the runtime. that to me is just unacceptable. Absolutely unacceptable. And the people who do this should be ashamed of themselves. And the rest of fandom should call these morons out and really disassociate with them, because they're giving us a bad name, and we got to change this culture in our community. We really do. But that's the runtime for Justice League. Can't wait to see it. The TV spots are all looking great, and they're not revealing too much, which I like. By the time this recording goes up, Wonder Woman and Cyborg week will have passed. And who knows what next week will bring. My guess would probably be, who's left? Who's left? We've had Aquaman, we've had
Flash. Batman.
Oh yeah, Batman. And I mean, there's a couple weeks before the film, so who are they going to, it leaves Batman and Superman. I hope to God they don't do one of these for Superman and spoil his return in one of these vignettes.
I doubt they will.
That would really piss me off. But Batman's coming down the down the pipe here soon. Batman week, so we'll look forward to that.
Well, speaking of which, we didn't discuss this prior to recording, but there are actually AT&T stores are doing, because they had a big event at the Times Square one recently, but now you can get Justice League posters, and they're doing some other stuff, so some other Justice League event type stuff at different AT&T stores. I think starting on the 27th, they've got 5 days in a row where they're doing it. Unfortunately, I think I was just talking to Travis Hines on Twitter, and I think that they're not, that you can't do it in Canada, that they're not doing it in Canada.
Yeah, I think it's a U.S. exclusive thing. So all of our U.S. listeners and you as well, Jordan, of course, enjoy that and take advantage of that if you can.
Thank you, Adam.
And then report back to us on the goodies that come from that. But aside from a runtime, there is news of another film in development. Now, you'll remember, Jordan, that Santa got it right this time. this is going to be a recurring theme on this podcast. But you'll remember that at one point, when Ben Affleck was still directing The Batman, Joe Manganiello had been cast as Deathstroke. And then once Matt Reeves came on and scrapped that iteration of the script, it seemed like that the Deathstroke would be out of the Batman picture. Well, as far as we know, he still is out of the picture for the Batman, but that doesn't preclude him from getting his time in the spotlight, because it was revealed as of this recording today, it's October 25th. According to The Wrap and The Hollywood Reporter, Deathstroke is getting his own solo film. Gareth Evans, who some of our listeners may know as the director of The Raid, is in talks to write and direct the film, with the intention of Joe Manganiello starring as Slade Wilson, a.k.a. Deathstroke. I think that is wonderful news. I loved the casting of Joe when it was first announced. I loved I guess it was the screen test that I think Ben Affleck posted about a year ago or so, with him in costume. I love the way the costume looked. And, given the fact that, The Raid, I know you've never seen it, but the fight choreography in that film is spectacular. And that's the kind of stuff that you need for a character like Deathstroke, in my opinion. I'm over the moon with this announcement. How are you feeling about it, Jordan?
Hey, I'm right with you, man. I love Deathstroke, and once we found out that Matt Reeves was starting from scratch with the Batman film, You know, I was kind of wondering about what was going to happen with Deathstroke. Now, I'm actually someone when it looked like he was going to be in the Batman film, I wasn't over the moon about that because I don't really see him as a Batman villain primarily. I see him more as a Titans and a Green Arrow villain, and I wasn't sure whether he was going to be the main villain of that Batman film. We still don't know whether he was going to be the main villain, but if he was, I wasn't too high on that idea. Mm-hmm. So I actually had no issue with him not being in it, other than I kind of felt bad for Joe because it felt like he was very excited about this role. My speculation was that we might see him in the Nightwing film, but now that it looks like he's getting his own film, this is really exciting too, and I think this is another great way to go with it. I'm interested to see what take they go with this. Do they go sort of with the current Deathstroke comics? Is he actually fighting some? Is it who might he be? You know, who might be the antagonist in this film that he might be fighting? I'm curious to see how all that plays out. But overall, I'm really excited about this. I'm not familiar with the director, as you mentioned. I've never seen that movie. I never even heard of that movie, The Raid. But the fact that you say that the fight choreography is really good, that gives me a lot of hope, because that, like you mentioned, is something that you'd really want for Deathstroke, certainly. My only thing that I'm hoping that this means is that I hope that this doesn't mean that Arrow has to change any of the plans that they have going forward for Deathstroke. Well, I know that it looks like the TV and the movies that they're giving a little more lenience now than they used to, where now like we have a Superman on TV and Superman in the movies. But I know that once Manu Bennett came back on Arrow, I think it was Guggenheim, somebody mentioned something like, oh, they used to have plans for him in the movies, but now they don't. So now we're able to move forward with him. All I hope is that whatever Arrow was trying to do with Deathstroke, that they still get to do what they're going to do with him despite this film.
Well, here's the thing, though. With whatever Deathstroke role in Arrow is going to end up being, that was only a couple episode arc, correct?
Well, we know that there's a specific two. I think it's a two episode arc.
I'm pretty
that for him though too. That's possible.
I'm pretty sure that it was, from what we know, it was just the premiere episode. And two more episode arc, like you were saying. If that's the case, then there is no overlap because, again, according to this report, you know, the talks are happening now. You know, they said in talks. Now, you got to remember, when we hear these reports, it's always typically a little bit later than a little bit after plans have been in motion. So, If it is a two arc plan, episode arc plan, it won't interfere at all, because those will be filmed and over with before. In fact, they might already be filmed before this film gets going, so it's not an issue. And given that Manu Bennett is on another show, I don't think there was much opportunity to get him in for longer term storylines.
Okay, that's a good point. Yeah, I knew that they had that two episode arc planned, and I do think Adam that it is already filmed, because I think that they've been filming the crossover recently, and I think that's right before the crossover.
Okay, so there you go.
But I just wasn't sure if they had any plans beyond that. But you make a good point about how they might not, since he's on another show.
Just for food for thought, so to speak. They are, the director, Gareth Evans, about 3 days ago posted an image of a Deathstroke graphic novel on his Instagram. And it's Deathstroke, the graphic novel is Deathstroke Volume 1, Gods of War. I don't know if that means it'll have any bearing on the potential film or not, but it's interesting that that's what he had on his desk as of 3 days ago. So make of that what you will. Look it up and see what that's about, and it might give you an indication on what may or may not happen in the film. But I'm excited by the prospect of it, because one thing that you have to give credit to Arrow for doing is amplifying Deathstroke's cachet, so to speak. They've made him a little bit more of a household name than he may have been before. Also, of course, Young Justice. The fanboys already knew who Deathstroke was, so that's not, you know what I'm saying? But Arrow, in terms of the general audience, has gone a long way into making him more of a household name. So, so that, you know, congratulations to Arrow for that. And I'm looking forward to hearing more about this, you know, how this film develops. It should be interesting. That's all I have in terms of film news, but I'm sure you have some TV news to discuss.
Indeed, I do. First up, we've got that the final of the main team basically has finally been cast for Titans, and that would be that Ryan Potter is going to be portraying Beast Boy on the Titans series. I think that this is really exciting. I'm only familiar with Potter from Big Hero 6, where he voiced the main character in that movie. And I know that's a little bit different. You're looking at voice versus live action, so it's hard for me to say how good he'll be as Beast Boy. I did see, if you remember, a while back he was campaigning to play Tim Drake in the DCEU, yes. And he actually made a video campaigning for that, so that's kind of cool. So even if that doesn't pan out, it's cool that he's joining the DC universe in a different capacity. The most striking thing about this news to me is that they went quite a bit older for Beast Boy than they did with Raven. And if you remember when we talked about the Starfire and Nightwing castings, they cast them very close in age, and then since they cast Raven really young, I was assuming that they'd probably cast Beast Boy pretty young. But instead, they've cast him sort of in the middle of those two age sets. Yeah. So I thought that was one of the things that that struck me first about this casting. But overall, I'm really excited about this. It's cool to finally – I mean, it's cool to finally get the full team cast now. So now we've got all four of the main team members, or what we assume are going to be the four main team members. I'm really excited to see what Ryan Potter brings to the role. How about you, man?
Yeah, like you said, I know him from his voice work in Big Hero 6, I liked him in that. And I was aware of the campaign for Tim Drake. And he looks like he's got quite a bit of fighting skill. So I'm sure that'll come in handy. You know, the acrobatics and stuff. For when he's doing Beast Boy things. So I'm in terms of that, I'm on board. Like it's hard because I haven't seen him aside from that video. I haven't seen him in anything, but you know, his age range, you're right. He's a little bit older than Raven, but not, you know, not as experienced, let's call it, as the Dick Grayson or Starfire. So I love the sort of team dynamic and how it's all in the middle and sort of, there, it is a wide range of ages, and I like that. And it's, I love the fact that the guy wanted to be in the DC films universe, but it ended up being on in the DC streaming service universe, or whatever they're going to call this, because we still don't know if it's in the Arrowverse or not. My bet is that it's probably not, but. Yeah, I'm on board. It's like you said, it's nice to have the full team cast, and it is what I found out was that the filming is scheduled to commence, I believe, mid to late November is when they start filming here in Toronto, and. They're either going to be filming until I can't remember. I'm pretty sure it was either March or May. They're going to be filming till. So, I mean, 13 episodes worth. So there you go. But I'm excited. I can't wait for this. I can't wait for the announcement. Like more info about the DC streaming service. So I say let's get this going and. You know, I've already said that DC streaming service already has my money. So between this and Young Justice, I can't wait.
I'm with you, man. I can't wait either. It's really exciting news, and I can't wait to see. I mean, we should start hearing even more stuff or seeing some photos or whatever once it starts filming next month. So I can't wait.
Yeah, I hope my thing. Before they start filming with the characters in costume, release a publicity still of the team in costume. I'd rather see a publicity still than grainy, you know, far away paparazzi pictures of the costume.
Oh, that's not what I meant. That's what I meant. I meant we should see. Yeah, I figure they'll most likely give us some sort of official photo is what I was referring to.
I mean,
to,
if I was part of the DC streaming service marketing team, what I would do, this is just me, nobody pays me for my 2 cents. So take this or leave it however you want. But if I were them, I would release an official photograph of the team in costume with an official press release about the DC streaming service, telling us when it's going to be available, how much it's going to cost, you know, all those details. I think, to me, that makes a lot of sense. You want to build hype around this thing, right? So that's the way to do it. That's how I would do it. But hey, as long as I get an official, clear, well-shot picture of the team in full costume sometime soon-ish, I'm happy. So yeah, that's my take on that. Anything else TV related?
Yeah, we've got one more piece of news, which is that just when you thought that the CW couldn't fit any more DC TV shows on it, it looks like they're developing one more, which is Project 13, and that's gonna center around Tracy 13 and her father, Dr. Terrence 13. And I'm gonna read a little blurb first off from Variety, who had the exclusive. Titled Project 13, the one-hour drama would center on Tracy, a 20-something forensic scientist and believer in the paranormal who discovers her own hidden extrasensory abilities when she joins her estranged skeptic father to investigate mysterious cases of the paranormal and unexplained phenomena. And I'm really excited about this because Tracy 13 is actually a character that I like quite a bit. I actually read the entirety of the Blue Beetle pre-Flashpoint run, and she was actually Jaime's girlfriend during that time, and so I really took a liking to her character during that time, and I thought she was a really cool character. If you saw the Justice League, if you saw the Teen Titans the Judas Contract animated film, she was there. She was working at, I think, the soup kitchen with Jaime, and it's also been speculated that she'll be in Young Justice Outsiders as well, because there's a character called 13 that I don't think it's been confirmed yet, but there's been a lot of speculation that that's Tracy 13. I think this should be a really cool show because it's focusing on something that none of the Arrowverse shows, and we don't know whether it's going to be in the Arrowverse, but none of the Arrowverse shows are really focusing in on, although Arrow did a little bit in season 4, but sort of the paranormal and the supernatural elements of the DC universe is what it looks like they're sort of leaning into. Just some of the names that are attached to this project: Elizabeth Banks is going to be an executive producer. Dagan Frickland will be a writer and executive producer, and Max Handelman will also produce. So yeah, what are your thoughts on this, Adam?
Well, the interesting thing for me is the whole, what were you saying, the paranormal aspect of it. I'm a sucker for that kind of thing, like X-Files, you know, Roswell, that kind of stuff is my jam. So in addition to superheroes, I also like strawberry jam, et cetera, but that's not what we're talking about. Just by the premise alone, I'm on board. But I have to confess, I have no idea who the hell these characters are. That's not a negative. It's just I have no idea who they are. Now that you mention she was in Teen Titans Judas Contract, that's cool. It didn't hit me that she was part of the DC canon, like in this way, from that movie. I did not read the Blue Beetle pre New 52 title. I may have to circle back and do that once.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, once we find out, you know, more about the show, that's something that I would circle back and go read. Do you know if they've had their own, like her and her father have had their own miniseries or anything along those lines?
You know, I don't. I don't know. In fact, that's the only place I'm really familiar with her in terms of comics is that Blue Beetle run. But so I don't know if she's had her own solo title.
Interesting, interesting. And it's cool because, you know, when you say paranormal, I often wonder, does that allow for television to bring on characters such as, Dead Man, Boston Brand? Could he possibly have a guest appearance in this TV series, this potential TV series? Somebody like the Phantom Stranger, you know, those kind of people like that. If her and her father were investigating those kind of characters, I think would be interesting. And
if it's in the Arrowverse, maybe we could see some of those characters that have already been introduced in the Arrowverse, like Constantine, perhaps, show up on this show.
But the reason why I'm going to take a stab and say it probably won't be in the Arrowverse is because it's a totally different creative team. Like Berlanti and company are nowhere near this.
That's true.
So my guess is that it's not going to be. I could be wrong, but you know, maybe not being part of the Arrowverse is not a bad thing either, because you need some variety in the shows. You don't want things to get stale or formulaic. So that would, you know, because if it's in the Arrowverse, it's going to have a Team 13, you're going to have four or five people, and it's going to follow the tropes of what the Arrowverse is. Because they, you know, all the shows, Supergirl has a Team Supergirl, Arrow has Team Arrow, Flash has Team Flash, the Legends are a team, so they don't need a friggin' team. But now they got the Time Masters? So they have that formulaic nature to those shows, because, you know, why mess with what works or what has worked for you? But it kind of be cool to have something, a different flavor within the CW superhero space than just Arrowverse stuff. So I'd actually welcome it not being part of the Arrowverse, because we already have is Black Lightning part of this is it part of the Arrowverse or not?
They've previously said that it won't be, but that doesn't mean it necessarily won't be in the future, because Supergirl wasn't initially, yeah. And then they did it later. So, but that's another, if Black Lightning does end up being in the Arrowverse, that'll add some variety too, because that's more of a family show than a team show. So that'll be a little bit different too, I'd imagine.
Well, I'd hope so, because like I said, it's getting a little predictable when you see Team Arrow, Team Flash, Team, you know, and it's like, all right, can we try something new? Especially for me personally, the way Flash and Supergirl have played out, I haven't been a fan of the new season after several more episodes, and so I'm hoping they turn around. But right now I'm kind of like, all right, give me something else.
What if it were loosely connected? Like, I know this was retroactively added to the Arrowverse, but Constantine was not a team show, and I know that was not intended to be in the Arrowverse when it was initially airing, but if they did something like that with this, where the show's different from the rest of the Arrowverse shows, but like it crosses over every once in a while, maybe not even part of the big crossover, but
just
like,
just make it different. That's my thing. Just give me something new, something fresh. That's all I'm asking. But yeah, look, anyway, to me, any way we can get more Constantine, I'm fine with. So if they wanna investigate a case that Constantine's on, and bring him on this Project 13 or whatever the show's called, then I'm down.
yeah, me too.
Because you could put that guy in anything, you know, and I'll watch it. But you're right. Elizabeth Banks is producing, so her name's got some cachet to it. So that might bode well for potential pickup for the series. I'm on board. But I, you know what? I'll always, my philosophy is, if it's got the DC brand attached, I'll give it a chance. I can't promise you I'll stick with it if the quality is crap, but I'll give it a chance. And you know, the only I'll tell you right now, the only DC brands that can basically be, that can have utter crappy versions, and I'll stick with it, in spite of that, would be Batman and or Superman. Because I'm a sucker for those two characters. Everybody else has to earn my patronage and viewership. So, but I'll always give a DC product a chance at the outset, and that's the way I would do with this one.
That's fair.
And you know, my hope is that either on the CW or on the DC streaming service, which really needs a name, I want a Deadman series. Like, it's Supernatural meets Nightwing. What the hell is taking CW so long to put that on the air? Like, really? Deadman is tailor-made for their network, and they've done nothing with it. Why? That's my question. So somebody, whether it be CW or the streaming service, get a Deadman live action show going, will you? That's my plea to either of those powers that be. We have another poll result to get to, Jordan, and this time I asked which of the Arrowverse premieres was the best, and much to my chagrin, the results did not go the way I voted this time, but the winner, by quite a hefty margin, was Supergirl at 67%.
Hey, well, it's about time, since my vote was so lost so badly
You got killed in the last one, and rightfully so.
but people seem to agree with me this time.
Well, you know, I think they what happened was here. But let me finish the results. So 67% voted for Supergirl, and the other 33% all went to The Flash. So DC's Legends of Tomorrow and Arrow did not get any love on our poll. I'm very upset about that, because in my opinion, the two worst of the four, for me, won this damn poll. So I'm not happy.
Now, was that was Facebook or that was Twitter?
It was Twitter, but Facebook pretty much also followed suit with roughly similar results. I mean, it was a little bit less lopsided, but Supergirl still came out on top. I think
that's Arrow, what I'm talking about.
I think Arrow got two votes in that one, in the Facebook poll, and one of those votes was me. Damn it! Yeah, and the reasoning, I've come to this reasoning, is that people were out shopping for Halloween candy, and they indulged in too much candy when they were voting for this on this poll, and the candy was expired, and it did something to their brain. That's the only reason I can come up with Supergirl and The Flash being 1-2, especially the, now in past seasons I would have said sure, but not these. Early episodes of, or not the premieres, because that's all this was about. If I redid this poll, especially after the latest Flash episode, I mean, Supergirl, the episode 3 was fantastic. It was my favorite of the season, the Martian Manhunter-centered one. We're not going to review it now, because that's not what it's about, but I like that episode. The Flash, especially the last episode, to me, was the worst of the series. Not the season, the series. So if I redid this poll with those episodes in mind, maybe the results would be different. But that's the results as we have them, and that it is what it is. Even though I didn't agree with them, those are the results, and I'm not going to rig it because unlike the election, there is no tampering involved in our votes. So that's it for our news and poll portion of the episode. And on the other side of this little brief intermission, we're going to be back with our guest and our main topic. So stay tuned. To Multiverse Musings, the DC Comics podcast. As I promised, we have a guest on tonight, and what we're going to be doing is we're going to be talking about the two Batman 66 in continuity animated films, Return of the Caped Crusaders and Batman vs. Two-Face. And Jordan, why don't you give our listeners a clue as to who our guest is this week?
Yeah, well, our second official guest on Multiverse Musings is now with us, and that would be Zaki Hassan. Zaki, this is the first time that I've spoken to you I won't say in person, but we've spoken online quite a bit in the past, and I've been a big fan of yours from hearing you on other podcasts. So how's it going today, man?
It's great. I'm excited to talk to you guys. I'm a big fan of your show from what I've heard so far, and I'm just honored to be part of the early goings.
Well, thank you. It's great to have you on, man.
That's fantastic. I've been looking forward to this, actually. And I've been talking to Zaki online as well. And I told him that you're forcing me to relive those Batman and Robin days. And so that's... he knows the pain I'm in for. I think January is when we're fixing to do those. But tonight's not that. We're talking about a much more pleasant era of Batman for me. Before we started on the animated film, Zaki, what's your and I'll get yours, Jordan, too, because I don't think we've discussed this with our listeners. But Zaki, you're the guest, so we'll let you go first. What's your relationship with the Batman 66 TV show?
You know, I think that when I think of Batman 66, I think of that as my gateway into not just the DC universe, but comic books and the concept of superheroes being on TV. The concept of heroism. I mean, I think my life story is sort of inextricably intertwined with the 60s Batman show. And I have nothing but warm feelings about it because it was so influential in so many ways.
And what about you, Jordan?
Well, you know, to be honest, I'm not as big a fan of Batman 66 as a lot of people. I'm a lot younger, so I didn't grow up certainly with it. I certainly didn't grow up when it was airing, but I didn't even really grow up with the show. In fact, I've only ever seen a few episodes here and there of the show. But I did have a VHS growing up of the 66 movie, and that I watched quite a bit as a kid growing up. And so I will admit that I'm not as big a fan of Batman 66 as a lot of Batman fans, but I certainly think it has its place in Batman history, even though it's not one of my favorite interpretations of the character.
For any of the listeners that don't know from my previous podcasting, I grew up with watching it in reruns. They were on, I remember, I think it was about 4 p.m. So right after, elementary school classes got out, I would be in a hurry to get home. And then what would happen was my mom would have cookies and milk waiting for me, and I'd watch the show with the promise that I'd do my homework right after. And that's... And that's what happened, but it was always right after school. Batman was waiting for me. So mine was like it was in reruns. Zaki, were you a first run or was it reruns?
It was reruns for me. Yeah, I'm old, but I'm not that old.
Right, okay, good. We're all three of us are in the same boat, but Jordan's seems to be much younger because he didn't have the luxury of having of having it in reruns at that point.
No, I did not.
You had it on videotape, which a lot of our listeners probably have no idea what that is. But nowadays, especially, it's like a video. What is that? The concept of rewinding is you know when they used to have those "be kind, please rewind." That's not it. That's a foreign phrase to probably a lot of our listeners. But the good old days when it was video cassette. Like you, Zach, Batman 66 was the first Batman anything that I saw. So Adam West was my first exposure to Batman and was my first exposure to the DC characters. So I love that. And you're right, it was like a morality play at the end of every episode. You know, there was always a lesson to be learned. And I just, the cliffhanger aspect of it, I ate that all up and I just love it. And, yes, I have ultimate portrayals that, Batman, if I were to say who's my favorite Batman, while Adam West wouldn't be the ultimate choice, he will always have an extremely special place in my mind.
And I agree with that.
For sure. While I brought it up, before we get into the movies, because tonight's, and Zaki's going to be on again, provided that he doesn't totally hate this experience, to talk another DC film. But since this is a Batman-esque podcast, I got to ask the question. Who is your favorite Batman, and what is your favorite Batman film?
Oh, boy, that's a great question. You know, I would say that it's hard for me to pick, honestly. I think my favorite Bruce Wayne is probably Michael Keaton. Mm-hmm. My favorite Batman is probably Ben Affleck, but and this is not me trying to hedge. In truth, I can find something to like in every single Batman we've gotten. I think Val Kilmer, I think George Clooney, everyone has some aspect that I find appealing. And I think to some extent, what I like about the character is how elastic he is. I mean, you can have this entire spectrum of portrayals going from Adam West and even before him, the actors in the serials, all the way to now. And every single version is valid and legitimate. And I think that's amazing.
Awesome. And those two choices that you made were, nobody's going to argue, certainly not me on either of those. Because, I mean, how can you go wrong with either of those choices? We're assuming what we like to do on this podcast is, we got carried away with our Man of Steel film review because we love that film so much. But what we're going to assume going forward is that the people listening to this have seen the films we're talking about. But in case they haven't, Jordan, give us a brief little summary of what Return of the Caped Crusaders entailed, just briefly.
So okay. You told me to pull up the IMDb.
Yeah, just go off the quick summary and then we'll go off. Yeah.
That's what I'll go ahead and do. The one for Batman vs. Two-Face is pretty good. The one for Batman Return of the Caped Crusaders is, extremely rudimentary, but I'll go ahead and read it anyway. Batman and Robin in the 1960s live-action series are back in action to take down their fiendish foes, united once more against them.
Cool. And, it's not very in-depth, but it does what it said.
Good enough.
Yeah, exactly. It covers what it had to. Zaki, we'll go through your likes and dislikes of this film, but what did you like? Let's start with the positive. What did you really?
I loved being re-immersed into the milieu of the TV series. I like the fact that they approach this film as if it exists within the world of the show, and they weren't too cute about it. I mean, there's a few kind of winks and nods, but I like the idea that had they made this, 50 years ago, it could have fit right in as like a two-part episode of the show. It got my nostalgia neurons firing. I mean, obviously, Adam West sounds like an 88-year-old man in the movie, and you can't do anything about that. But just having him back in there and Burt Ward back in there, and I mean, their voices are so recognizable. They're so immediately recognizable that to me, watching it, I was back in you know, second grade watching, you know, my Fox affiliate on a weekday morning, you know.
Yeah, and what I found was that, especially with, you know, I thought that, yes, you're right about what you said. It could fit in as a two-parter of the show. But they really did try and, like, the whole part where they go to space.
Yes.
That was like a, we didn't have the budget to do this back in 66, so we're going to do it now. And it was like, it was so out there, but I loved every second of it. Like, it's like I don't care how implausible this is. I'm not going to try and look to, you know, look for something to ground it in. Like, I don't need any of that grounding in reality for this. I just love that it just, like, we're going to have fun with this. And for me, the fact that it was the core villains back. It was, absolutely, you know, the Joker, the Riddler, the Penguin, and Catwoman. That pairing, to me, felt like the 66 movie, because it had all
those
guys.
It's almost like a sequel to that movie.
Yes, yes. And I loved the, what really got me, and what really, like you said, made me feel like home, was the animation style was so spot on. Yeah. And the fact that the Batcave had everything that the 66 one had. And, you know, seeing the William Shakespeare bust again, and the bookshelves fade away, and there's the bat poles. And they even gave an explanation for how their clothes would suddenly, you know, they'd appear in their Batman and Robin costumes. And as a kid, I was like, how do they do that? Like, it always it always confused the hell out of me. And I was like, now I have an answer. And just to reiterate what you said, Zach, it was, you know, it got so much that I was feeling so back in my childhood that I'm like, I got to pause this and go get a plate of milk and cookies with this movie, because it wouldn't be right if I'm not eating milk and cookies. Jordan, what was your first impressions?
Yeah, one thing I wanted to ask both of you guys, because this plays into what I was about to say about my first impressions movie. Did either of you guys get the chance to see this in the theater when it came out?
I didn't.
Unfortunately, I didn't. For some reason, in Canada, we get screwed over here with these kind of events. We didn't get that. So,
sucks.
At least where I was, so I didn't get an opportunity, but.
Okay. Well, I was just asking about this because they didn't do that for Batman versus Two-Face, but they did do it for Return of the Caped Crusaders, at least here in the States, anyway, Adam. I did get a chance to see it when it was in theaters, and so I that was part of my experience seeing it for the first time, and so I wanted to mention that, because that was a pretty exciting experience to sort of get to see Adam West Batman and Burt Ward Robin on the big screen. And so, like Zachy was saying, that was one of the highlights, of course, of this movie, is hearing Adam West and Burt Ward reprise their roles as Batman and Robin. Yes, Adam West did sound pretty old in this movie. It sounded like he was Mayor West, but in a Batman costume, but
that's not a bad thing either.
No, it was. It worked. I mean, it's Batman 66, so it still works. Also hearing Julie Newmar, of course, reprise her role as Catwoman, that was great as well. Like you were saying, I think Adam, I think you were saying that it was cool how they used the same four villains that they had, even though I don't really consider Catwoman a villain, but those same four villains just to call our villains in this instance, that they had from the Batman 66 movie, and that they used those as the primary antagonists here again. That was really cool to see. I thought that there were a lot of great nods to sort of Batman history. My favorite one being when Adam West started saying, like, he said the Michael Keaton line, and then he said the Dark Knight Returns line, and just sort of seeing sort of the coolest thing about the plot of this movie was seeing Adam West Batman go dark, actually, in this movie, which was just a hoot, really. I thought it was, anyway. And then I've also got to mention, I really liked all the interactions between Batman and Catwoman, because I'm a huge Bat-Cat shipper, so even when it's the 66 version of the characters, I'm still a sucker for any Batman-Catwoman scene. So that was another highlight for me.
Yeah, and I thought that, like I said, it was a really, especially with this first film, it was really a love letter to the show in some respects. But like you pointed out, Jordan, it paid homage to later iterations of Batman, so like more current iterations. And it was able to, like, to see Adam West in that sort of space. And the whole premise was that Catwoman nicks him with this bat nip, it was called potion. She scratches him. And at first it doesn't seem like he's affected, because you, as a viewer, you're thinking, oh, he probably had some kind of repellent for that that'll cure that. But he, as the film goes on, he does get affected, and you see him getting more agitated and more violent and darker, and to the point where he even uses one of the villains, what was it, the Replicator Ray?
Yeah,
I think it was called, to replicate himself, and he takes over all the job. Like he's the commissioner of police, he's the head police officer, he's the mayor, he's the judge, and he's doing all the judicial and lawmaking jobs to clean up the city. But you get those, like when he said the Michael Keaton line, I think it was it, do you want to get nuts? Was that the line? Was that the one he?
Yeah, that was the one he used.
Yeah.
When I heard that, I'm like, okay, like two sections of my childhood have just intersected, and my head may explode here. I don't know what's gonna happen, but and I even liked the like you said, the Batman Catwoman interaction. Zaki, I wonder if you caught this, because it took me second viewing to notice this. There was the part where they were in space, and I don't know if he's getting disoriented because of, you know, the atmosphere or whatever, but he's seeing triple of Catwoman, and he's seeing Julianne Moore's version, Lee Merriweather, and Eartha Kitt. And yeah, it was like a split second, and I was like, man, that's genius.
Very clever.
Like when he does go quote unquote, and I'm using air quotes that nobody could see, bad. He fires Alfred, and Alfred ends up on the street, you know, homeless and disheveled, and he kicks Robin out of the house, and it was just like I couldn't stop laughing. Like for 72 minutes of the runtime, it was nonstop like laughter, and you know they even had the reactor in the Batcave that came into play in the finale near the end of the movie. But also when they first get trapped at the villain's lair, it was the giant TV dinner contraption, and they're tied to it.
Yeah,
I mean, that just, again, like those big oversized props that they used to use in the show, like having those back in this movie were so special.
Yeah, I mean, you know what's great about it, I'll tell you, is that it in animation they can make it look like what you saw in your head when you were watching.
Exactly.
You know, because that's the beauty of this show, is that when you're, you know, 6 or 7 or whatever, you don't see the jokes. You see it as a completely straight superhero show. I mean, I have very distinct memories of watching this show. And, you know, I'm like terrified at whatever the death trap is. And my dad is sitting behind me just cracking up, you know. And he loved the show because he thought it was hilarious. And I loved it because it was Batman and Robin. And I think that's what this movie does, where it's like this very delicate balancing act. It doesn't tip making us aware of the joke.
Yeah, no, and that was the beauty of it. It worked for kids and adults, and it was just genius in the way it did that. Was there anything specific about whether it be with Catwoman or anything of the villain's plot that really stood out to you, Zaki?
It was just a typically gonzo plot, a la what we used to see on the show, and so you get to see it realized with, you know, the freedom that animation gives you, but it was just right in that same continuum.
And you guys have both touched on it. You're right about the, especially with Adam West. Yeah, he sounded like he was 88 at the time, and he was. There's nothing you can do about that. But it was like, this is Batman. I'm home again. And Burt Ward, to me, his voice hasn't aged a day. Like, he just steps right back into it, and it's Robin again. What were your thoughts on some of the voice actors? Because I thought some of them sounded like the original counterparts, and some were a little bit off. And that was the sort of thing that, for certain moments, took me out. Like the Joker, to me, Cesar Romero had such a distinct sound and laughter. Yeah. The voice actor they got to do it, no disrespect to him, it just didn't. It took me out a little bit of the movie in that respect. And so too did the Penguin voice actor. Because again, Burgess Meredith was so distinct in his performance that if it's not him, it does take you aback for a bit, especially because it's the first time you're hearing these particular voices portraying, a version that you're used to sounding another way. But I thought the actor that did the Riddler was almost spot on. Obviously, Julie Newmar came back to do Catwoman, and that was great.
You know, it's funny. I almost wish with Riddler, they would have just made it the John Astin Riddler, because John Astin is still around, and then we could have gotten one more Batman Rogue from the series into the movie.
Yeah, that's also a good point. Good point. But even in saying that, I thought the actor did a good.
I agree with him. Yeah, I agree.
And
with Joker, you know, it occurred to me that Ralph Garman does a fantastic Cesar Romero impression. I almost wish they would have got him to play the Joker.
And I was surprised that they didn't get him for one of those, because you're right, he can pretty much do just about anybody on that show, which is incredible in and of itself. And his Adam West is really spot on as well. So
agreed.
That's but Jordan, what stood out with the voice work and
I agree. I agree. I think Wally Wingard, I think, who's playing the Riddler, I think he did the best in terms of replicating the original actor. His Gorshin was pretty spot on. In terms of the others, they weren't as good. It sounded like, I think, William Sawyers, who was playing the Penguin, it sounded like he was doing a mix of Tom Kenny's Penguin and Dana Snyder's.
Oh.
Yeah.
But something the Holy Badcast guys mentioned, that there could be legal reasons why certain they weren't allowed to replicate the voices of certain actors, why they weren't allowed to do impersonations of them.
Oh, that's interesting.
Could be, yeah. I never thought of that. But I mean, like I said, it does. I don't think it ultimately deters from the movie. It just takes a little while to adjust to be like, because the first time you hear them, it's like, uh-oh. This doesn't sound like what I remember, especially after hearing Adam West. Because, I mean, Anne Harriet, I thought, was spot on. I thought even the Chief O'Hara sounded, and even in Batman Two-Face was even better, the Chief O'Hara performance. So it's not like it's something that took me out of the movie, per se, for long. It just it did require a little bit of an adjustment from ever so briefly. But I thought, you know, given the circumstances and what you may have alluded to via Holy Backcast, Jordan, I thought all did well in their roles to try and bring those respect to those performances for those actors who were no longer with us at the time. But yeah, overall, like, I mean, this particular movie, it was just, like I said, the thing that got me was having, aside from the rewatching the 66 series, having this version of Batman back, and this really was a love letter to that show. And I was so glad that Warner Brothers went ahead and brought this iteration of Batman back to life in animated form. I thought it was fantastic. I had so much fun with it. Overall impressions of the first one. If you want to give a rating, you can. Jordan,
were we going to talk any negatives? You brought that up earlier.
That's right. I got overwhelmed by the positivity. Zach, is there anything that you didn't like? I mean, I kind of covered it with the voice, but is there anything you didn't like that really?
Well, you know, I mean, I think that The if there is a quibble I have, it's with stretching this concept into a feature-length format. And so to some extent, it's the same complaint I would have about, you know, the movie, the live-action movie of the 66 show, which is, I think the way the show is constructed, it really works best in these 24-minute capsules.
Yes.
And, you know, the risk is, you know, when you stretch it out to 90 minutes, it plays the joke out a little bit. And I do feel that way about the 66 movie. So to some extent, I echo that with this film is, you know, I do feel like with Batman 66, a little goes a long way.
That's fair. Jordan, what were any negatives coming on your end?
Okay, well, here's what I'll say. I'm not, just a teaser for what I'm about to say in a minute. I'm not going to give this movie the highest review. It's not that I have that many negatives about the movie. It's just that for me, Batman 66 isn't one of my favorite interpretations of the character. Mm-hmm. So right. It's just not, if that makes sense, it's just not a portrayal of the character that is one of my favorites. So, but I will say that I have one main, it's kind of petty, but it's my one biggest complaint about this movie. The Dark Knight Rises jab. That every time I watch this movie, that gets me, and it pisses me off to no end that they put that in there. Because the end of The Dark Knight Rises is my favorite movie ending of any movie ever. That ending is, in my opinion, it's the closest to flawless you can possibly get. It just, for me, it puts like the perfect end on that trilogy. And I know it's controversial. I know it is. But for me, I just absolutely adore that ending. So the fact that they took a jab at that here, it sort of irks me every time I watch this movie.
I should have predicted that you were going to have a problem with that. I should have known. but for me, again, it was just because Adam West and Burt Ward and you know, Julie Newmar sounded so good in their roles, and it brought me back in time. Hearing the voices that didn't sound as spot on for, like, you know, the heavy hitters like the Joker and the Penguin specifically, that kind of took a notch off my, you know, positivity sales a bit there. But other than that, I to me, that was the only real gripe. And I agree with what Zaki stated about, you know, if you try and extend the joke for too long, then it could get tired after that length of time. But like I said, overall, I was just over the moon that this iteration of Batman was back. And which, you know, leads us into the follow-up, which I'm surprised that, I mean, I guess it was a smart business decision in terms of planning one directly, like putting it into the works directly after this one. Was the sequel. I wasn't expecting we'd get a sequel. I thought it was going to be a one-off and it would ride off into the sunset. But we did get a sequel, Batman versus Two-Face. Jordan, just give us a brief read-through of what the synopsis is for that one.
Alrighty. This one is a little bit more in-depth than the one they had for Batman Return of the Caped Crusaders. So here goes. Gotham City District Attorney Harvey Dent is mutilated in a laboratory accident. When the duplicitous Two-Face embarks on a crime spree, Batman and Robin must solve the mystery of his identity while facing off against several other foes.
Cool. And again, very, very apt. It's a very spot on summary of the film. Zaki, what was your take on this one in terms of positives and bringing Two-Face into this world? Because one of the unique things about this movie was it was bringing a character that wasn't ever introduced on the show.
Yeah, you know, Two-Face is right up there, probably second only to the Joker for me in terms of my favorite Batman villains. And I think part of the reason I always liked Two-Face was the mystique of him not having been on the TV show. And so it was always like, wow, this guy's so cool. And, you know, I don't know anything, like, because there's plenty of, like, not great Batman villains who also were not on the show, but Two-Face was just visually striking. It's just a great concept. And so, you know, right there, when you tell him, and I think they did a comic, the 66 comic where they introduced Two-Face into that, which I have not read. So
they did.
I have to plead ignorance there. But when you say, oh, we're going to have William Shatner, like 1966 William Shatner as Two-Face, as Harvey Dent, holy moly, that's just fantastic. I mean, you talk about genius casting. You're putting William Shatner and Adam West together.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I was bought and paid for as soon as they announced this. And I think overall I enjoyed the sequel more than the original one because it did something a little different, you know, because the first one is like a greatest hits package. And you know that going. And like you said, right, it's the ride into the sunset. But here it's like, let's imagine that we're telling a story that they never got to tell. And let's do that. So and Shaq, I mean he's not messing around. You know, he really does a good job with the voice work here.
I agree. Jordan, what were your general thoughts on this one?
Okay, all right. Here's what I'll start. I was very excited by the fact that they were bringing in Two-Face as well, and also that they brought in Hugo Strange and Harleen Quinzel as well, neither of whom appeared on the show. So that was, I mean, that's the biggest appealing thing about the movie itself is the new characters. Also, of course, the fact that at this point we knew it was Adam West's final performance as Batman. And so I think that adds another something it's really unfortunate, but also something special about this movie is hearing Adam West one last time in the role. Overall, this movie, I know, Zach, you said you liked it more than the previous. I didn't like it as much as the previous, and that's because like I was saying with the previous one, other than that one nitpick I had that was sort of petty, I didn't really have any specific issues with the first movie that I could really point out. This one I do have some more specific issues with. However, what I will say is that overall I did enjoy it as well. I had issues with the way Two-Face was written, the twist they put on him, the way they did his origin. I like you, Zaki. I love Two-Face. He's one of my favorite Batman villains as well. And ever since Batman Forever, I'm very protective of Two-Face because of that movie.
sure.
And if that makes sense, because
I wanted to put myself in Arkham Asylum after Batman and Robin, but there was none available. I just want to lock myself away. What have they done to me?
Well, but what I will say, even though I did have some issues, and I guess I'll get it. I won't talk about that right now. I'll let Adam talk about his overall thoughts first. But I do have some issues that I'll get into later about Two-Face in this movie. What I will say though is that Shatner was phenomenal in the role. His I couldn't even tell it was Shatner at times. Especially his Two-Face voice was just like you could take that out and put that in a serious Batman movie, and I could buy it. Like he was really good in that role.
I totally agree. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, for me, the overall thoughts it was a 2-for-1 special when they announced. I think it was at Comic-Con, and of course I wasn't there because you know that's on my bucket list maybe in San Diego one year before it's all said and done. But when they announced that William Shatner was playing Two-Face, I'm like, holy crap! Like they went and they're pairing two of TV's biggest icons of that era in one movie, and it's a Batman movie. Like, take my money, here's my wallet, take it all, and just like, that movie was pre-ordered the minute they announced that. I mean, I would have, let's be honest, they could have cast anybody. I would have bought it because it was Batman 66, but the minute they said that, it's like, all right, I'm in. And then also the fact, like both of you, I really love Two-Face as a villain. I think it's, you're right, next to the Joker, I think he's right there. And so that was the extra incentive aside from William Shatner. But like Zaki said, here it wasn't just let's rely on what, I mean, they still had elements, you know, the tried true elements of Batman 66, but they told an entirely new story. They weren't just resting on their laurels and we know people love this, let's just give them what they're used to. They went and tried something different and created a story that was totally unique. And from everything that I remember of that one-shot comic, it is not, this movie is not an adaptation of that.
Okay.
So this was, you know, when they call it a DC animated original film, in this case, it really is. Like that original wording really applies here. you know, I might as well go into some of my likes, and then I'll pass. We'll go around. But I really liked. You guys have already echoed this. William Shatner in that role, like he delivered. He wasn't phoning it in. It was, you know what I mean? He wasn't just collecting a paycheck. He put on a performance, and the vocal shift that he did when he was putting on the Two-Face persona, it had a frightening element to it, for sure. And I thought it was, you could almost believe that Two-Face and Harvey Dent were two separate people. Even, yeah. You know, they're two people in one inhabiting one body, one mind. But they were two distinct personalities. I really enjoyed the fact that this version of the origin, to me, played more on the Jekyll and Hyde, you know, mythology.
Yeah.
It was really a lot more in tune to that than, you know, what were you? I mean, they still have the coin and all that, but it really, like, it felt like there were moments in the film, and I was a little confused, where maybe you guys can help me out here, but there were a couple of scenes, were there not, where Two-Face was actually talking to Harvey Dent, and there were two distinct, like, people standing in the scene, or was my mind just imagining that?
No, I got that sense too. Yeah.
Okay, because I'm like, wait a minute, and I don't think that's, I don't think they ever paid, and that's one of my negatives. I don't think they ever paid that off. Like, who was the other person he was talking to? Because there was clearly somebody standing there when he was. So my only reasoning in my mind, and again, why would he do this? It doesn't really compute. Were the two twins, maybe because it was black, it was like to pull off the ruse. I don't know, to pull off the ruse, he had them standing. I have no idea, but I couldn't reconcile. I'm like, why is Two-Face standing across or next to Harvey? I couldn't make sense of that. So that was my one thing that confused the crowd. And I'm like, am I losing it? As I get older, am I going insane here? Is there literally two people in the scene? I have no idea. But
were they trying to go for, were they, I mean, this is, I'm just trying to defend it. Is it possible? I'm just throwing this out there. Is it possible they were going for like a Beautiful Mind type of thing where he was just envisioning Two-Face as a separate entity, whereas really they were one and the same. And we were just seeing how he envisioned it, how Harvey envisioned it.
I mean, it could have been, but to me, and I'm like, and you know what? I'll tell you what came to mind, because I watched it with a friend of mine, and I said, when we're watching it, I'm like, okay, I figured out how they're doing this. They're gonna say that the other guy standing there as Two-Face was actually Clayface, and in my head, I'm like, all right, I'm waiting for a Clayface reveal, and then there was no Clayface reveal, and I'm like, well, okay, what the heck is going on here? I was totally thrown for a loop there, but and even how it was tied in with the. Like his origin, how it was tied in with the evil, like Hugo Strange's evil extractor overloading and then exploding. It made the origin to me made sense within the context of the show.
So I
really appreciated that. I mean, it's not the origin we're used to, but the gist of it is there.
I think it's kind of crazy that we have like four portrayals of Two-Face, four distinct origins for Two-Face.
Yeah, it's the multiverse, you know? which is when I was coming up with a name for this show. I'm like, what am I going to call this show? And then
I
started thinking of all the different versions of these different, and I'm like, all right, I'll go. I'm like, is anybody using this? No. All right, we'll go with it. but so I thought for the context of 66 Batman, I thought that origin worked. Like Jordan, and I think like Zaki mentioned, I liked the little glimpse of Hugo Strange and Harley Quinn, or Dr. Harley and Quinzel in this, and the little like winks and smiles that she and the Joker were sharing. I thought that was like, I'm like, all right, I see what you're setting up. I love that they they included that those little bits just to plant the seed. You know what I mean?
Now, apparently, Adam, and I've got to credit the Holy Batcast guys on this again too, because I didn't know about this. Apparently, only on the I watched on digital, so I wouldn't have even had access to this. But apparently, only on the Blu-ray, there's a special feature that's I think it was originally intended to be a post-credit scene, but it's with Harley and the Joker. Maybe it's something to do with Harley, and it's sort of. I guess the initial intent was that they were setting up a Harley Quinn movie in this universe. But with the passing of Adam West, I don't know if that's still on the table. Because the speculation, I think this is what the Holy Batcast guys were saying, was that it was originally intended to be a post-credit scene. And then perhaps they're not sure they're going to make that movie after all now. And so that they put it on as a special feature instead.
I haven't watched the special feature, so I don't know. But I mean, if they're saying those guys are reputable guys, so if they're saying it's there, I'm sure it is. I'll have to go back and watch the special features. But and the cool what I really liked about this film is that they took the time to showcase that Bruce and Harvey had a friendship, like a sort of a pre-existing friendship. And yeah. I love that. Robin was mistrusting of that friendship, and there was a hint of jealousy in Robin with that friendship. So I love that they went that extra mile to do it, because they could have easily ignored that angle, you know, that's been present for most of the incarnations, the friendship between Harvey and Bruce. But I'm glad that they threw it in, and. I mean, I just like the whole Jekyll and Hyde and aspect of Two-Face. I thought it was an, you know, you think of it in that when you think of Two-Face, there is already that element exists, but to see it on a more literal level like we did here, I thought really I was like, oh, okay, I never, you know, I know this comparison is made, but now that you see it, like. Truly exposed right in front of your face, you're like, okay, now, all right, I get it. So were there specifics, Zaki, that you want to hit on that you really enjoyed of this movie, like specific portions?
You know, I touched on it. I liked the idea that we treat the it's not about the origin of Two-Face. I mean, we get that as a prologue, but the bulk of the movie is It's an adventure with Two-Face, but it's not, you know, the origin of Two-Face. That's very smart of doing it, because it's like we've gotten two pretty darn good origin stories for Two-Face already that really go deep into that. So it's kind of like let's just because when you think about it, even on the show, they never did villain origins.
No.
So I like the fact that they found a way to weave in the origin, but they're like, okay, now let's move on. You know, it's just a story with Two-Face.
And the cool thing that I forgot to mention, I get both of you to touch on it. I really like the inclusion of King Tut.
Sure.
I mean, and how that serviced, you know, obviously to show Harvey Dent as the attorney aspect of district attorney aspect of Harvey Dent, but the idea that it was this again. This multiple personality kind of thing, and the whole exchange where he's in court and, you know, the one side is arguing, well, or his attorney is like, well, he can't be, the professor can't be held responsible because he, you know, it's a different personality. He's not King Tut. And so every time they needed answers from him when they were interrogating him, you know, Chief O'Hara or whoever it was would bop him over the head and his King Tut persona would take over. And just that back and forth, I thought was great. I thought it was really funny. And I will point out, the voice actor who did King Tut was on point. That sounded exactly like the 1966 version.
He did, yeah. Victor Bono. Yeah.
Jordan, and there was more of a they played up more of the Catwoman Batman sort of love. I don't know. Love interest thing in this movie. They teased it a little more. So, since you're a big proponent of that relationship, what do you think of that?
Man, I love that in this film, especially when Batman goes and he's like with her when she's in. Oh, it's not Arkham. It's Gotham State Penitentiary here,
yeah,
right?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, well, he's there on the ledge, and I thought that was a great scene. I really like that, because going into this movie, I was worried that Catwoman wasn't going to be in it as much, because she was barely in the trailer for this movie, and then she was on the box art, but I was sort of worried about how big a role she'd have, and really what it turned out was that she had a very big role, a pretty big role anyway. And so I was very happy about that. And also, like you mentioned in the last movie, they had a nod to both Lee Merriweather and Eartha Kitt. In this movie, they actually had Lee Merriweather voicing a character, which was Lucy Lee Diamond, and they actually had her switch places with the Julie Newmar Catwoman at one point in the movie.
That's
and
right.
So I thought that was a great way of...
That's great.
Yeah. I thought that was a great way that in this movie, but also in the last movie, like we talked about, I love how they're nodding to the multiple versions of Catwoman that appeared in Batman 66.
And one thing I really loved about both movies, but specifically this movie, I mean, it's something that's so minor that you wouldn't think to mention it, but I have to. The opening credits, I thought, were so well done for this movie. The way they feel.
Yeah, I really I dug it.
Like, it's so creative. I mean, nothing beats the humorous end credit dance sequence from the first one with Batman,
right.
With Batman and Catwoman. There's even a bomb. You know, they even do the play on can't get rid of a bomb scene in those end credits. But I thought the opening credit, I thought it was very inventive. I thought, and I like when these films get creative with their openings. I think it's a nice little creative venture that they. So I enjoyed that. I thought it was great. And even, I mean, the only thing is the ending after, the weird thing about this movie for me was the fact that the entire citizenry of Gotham at one point gets turned into like two-faced zombies. Like, it was just so, it was so out there and so, like, something that's never been done with the, you know, with that character before. And so, yes, it's out of character, and it might not be to people's taste, but I liked it because it was so different. And Robin's when they were firing off like bazookas with the antidote, right? And Robin's getting a little trigger happy in the Batcopter, and Batman admonishes him. He's like, Robin, show some restraint, and he's like, oh, sorry, and he gives that little smirk. Like that's vintage 66. That little, you know, that little, like again, like I said earlier, that morality play, that little reference.
Yeah.
But it was enough that I'm like, oh man, like this is why I love this show. This is part of the reason why I love this show. So I thought that really, really got me to chuckle. And the whole, like I said, the whole zombified two-faced citizenry aspect was kind of unique. The only thing that, again, my quibble, and then we'll go around and see if you all have other. We'll get the Jordans, whatever they are. It sounds like it might be a long list. But mine was the ending with the sort of amnesia that Harvey Dent didn't remember. What was going on with that they were Batman, like that Bruce Wayne and Dick Grayson were Batman and Robin. The whole amnesia thing, and this is partly due to Smallville, because Lex always forgot that Clark was, you know, whenever he'd find out. It seemed like he had like some sort of concussion and then forget. And that was so often used on Smallville that I'm like, even here I got to put up with this concussion thing. So that was kind of my negative, the cop-out kind of ending, and you know, everything ends happy-go-lucky. I understand that it's, but it would have been nice. I mean, again, there's probably, to my knowledge, there's not going to be another one of these because Adam West is unfortunately no longer with us. But... it would have been nice to sort of leave it a little bit more open-ended to give the sense of something could happen down the line with this, but it was a little too clean for me, the ending. But that's my only real gripe. We'll start with you this time, Jordan. What are your gripes, if any?
Oh boy.
Do I have to go get a drink? Do we have to settle in? Do we need a pillow for this? It sounds like
It's the same gripe essentially that I'm gonna have with my Batman Forever review when we eventually get around to that. But it's essentially, and I'm gonna preface this by saying I know this is Batman 66, and that's sort of what I try to tell myself about Batman Forever a lot too, is that they're trying to do a campy version of the character. But for me, it's like with Two-Face, the most interesting thing about Two-Face to me is his origin, and it's the fact that he goes from being Bruce's best friend and Gotham's white knight to one of its greatest criminals. And the thing to me about that is so fascinating is his descent into villainy. And so the fact that this movie starts with his origin, and then so we don't see anything before his origin. And I realized that in Batman 66, as I can't remember whether it was you, Zachy, or whether it was you, Adam, who pointed this out, but okay, Zachy, you pointed out that Batman 66 didn't really do origins at the time, but with Two-Face, like, that's so integral to the character for me, and it's like it's the same quibble I have with Batman Forever. It's that they skipped over they glossed over, basically, with TV footage, the most important thing about this character is his journey into being a villain. And it's the same thing they did, was that they glossed over it really quickly. Then you jump forward a huge amount of time. And I will say, I didn't mention this before, but I did think it was cool how we did see both King Tut and Bookworm in pretty big roles in this movie. I thought that was cool. But the fact that we skipped through all that time, and then all of a sudden we get to this whole thing with Two-Face. And I realize that they put a twist on it, and I sort of want to praise them putting a twist on it. It's just that, like, I'm okay with different interpretations of characters. I really am. But what it comes down to is whether I liked their different take or whether I didn't. And in this case, I just wasn't on board with their with the changes that they made to Two-Face, because for me, Two-Face it's a psychological thing. And to make it this physiological thing where he's literally can transform his body from part of identity to Two-Face. And then, I mean, it really got out of hand with, like, Rob. As soon as Robin turned it and got half scarred and he was Two-Face, I was like, I was just rolling my eyes at that, because I just it just got so far away from what appeals to me about the character of Two-Face that William Shatner, phenomenal performance as Two-Face, but the way that they actually portrayed Two-Face in this movie just did not work for me.
Fair enough. I totally get your perspective. Zaki, what about you? Any negatives that you want to point out?
To some extent, as we were discussing earlier, my inclination is I sort of grade this on a curve. Even though what's funny is everything Jordan said, I don't. There's nothing I disagree with there. I just, to me, it's like, like that. That's my reaction, you know. what do you do?
Yeah, exactly. So,
you know, but I think. If there's one quibble I had, it's something you brought up where, to me, honestly, the inclusion of Harleen Quinzel took me out of it a little bit, because I'm like, she didn't exist when the show was made. And to me, it's like, in my weird fanboy mind, I want to think of this as something that would have been made back then. So it's like, well, Harley Quinn didn't come into existence until 30 years after the show ended. So to me, that's one of those things where for a second I'm like, well, come on now. Come on, you know.
Yeah, fair enough. I get it. I just love the character, so.
Yeah, no, I get it. Yeah. So, again, and to be clear, that's one of those quibbles where it's like, well, but again, I grade this thing on a curve, and partially it's as we've said repeatedly. I mean, this is our last chance to spend a little bit of time with Adam West as Batman. So, you know, whatever you guys want to do, that's fine. You know, that was me.
Yeah, and I think honestly. I think it's a nice way. I'm so glad that, you know, before his passing, that he got to see the resurgence of his version of Batman with the release of the series on Blu-ray and DVD, and also with these two animated films. I'm glad that he got to see that popularity and that love for his interpretation of the character come back, because there is a time where some people who were fans of this particular show denounced it as, oh, that's not Batman, that's not Batman. You know, there were people that did that. And it's nice to see that people, like you said, Zachy, he's so elastic, he's so malleable that he can have different interpretations of the character. There's going to be an audience for it. In respect for Batman 66, I think a lot more people are fond of it than not, and I'm just glad that he got to be around long enough to relive that resurgence and sort of in an animated way put on the costume one more time or two more times.
It's crazy. You know, I saw him at a convention like not even 2 weeks before he passed away, and it'll be my great regret that I didn't go up and talk to him and just shake his hand. They were wheeling him around. He was in a wheelchair, and this was the final appearance that it was advertised as such, the final appearance with Adam West and Burt Ward together at a convention. And again, it was just one of those things. I was running so, I was so behind schedule. I just didn't make the time, and I regret it deeply, you know?
Yeah, I mean, he came here to Toronto a couple of times. I think a couple of years ago he was here, but unfortunately, that weekend that he was here, I just couldn't make the convention, and it never worked out. But definitely nothing but respect and fond memories and love for him as portrayal of Batman. If it wasn't for him, I probably wouldn't be a Batman fan. Or I can't say that, but I mean, it wouldn't be as big as it is for me. And
you wouldn't have this podcast if it wasn't for Adam West.
That I will say. Love the guy to no end, and I appreciate everything he brought to the character and to the legacy. Jordan, before we go on to the couple questions that we have, is there anything you want to say to wrap up your thoughts on these two films?
Oh, well, I was just going to say speaking of what you were saying about Adam West, I wanted to mention two things. One, even though this was the last Batman portrayal, I don't know how many episodes left we have of him on Family Guy, but the most recent episode of Family Guy, he was in the most recent episode of Family Guy, so I don't know if that was his last one or if there's any more, but there was at least that one more that we got of him. And then also what I want to say is that even though Adam West Batman wasn't as big a part of my Batman of growing up as it was for you guys, I've said it before on the show that the animated series The Batman was what made me a diehard Batman fan. And he had a role in that show. He was Mayor Grange on The Batman.
The mayor. That's
yeah. Funny. So even though it was a smaller role, he did have a role in what made me a Batman fan as well. So I just wanted to mention that. Are we gonna do grades for this movie or?
It's up to you guys. I mean, let's do it. So for Return of the Caped Crusader, what would be your letter grade, Zaki?
I'd give it a B.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Jordan?
For Return of the Caped Crusaders?
Yes, sir.
C+ for me.
All right. Zaki, for Batman vs. Two-Face?
It's a slightly higher B.
Okay. Jordan?
Batman vs. Two-Face would be a C for me.
All right. And for me, Return of the Caped Crusader is a B+, and Batman vs. Two-Face is an A-. Now, we usually end it, when we have questions, we usually end the show with a couple of questions, and we do have questions this week, Jordan, so I'll let you ask the questions, and then we'll all respond with our thoughts. Go ahead, Jordan.
Say something clever, because I didn't have them pulled up.
Well, my cleverness has a time limit. And
quick, somebody do the Bat-2-see while Jordan.
Yeah, so we'll turn on our videos and really scare the audience with our bat dance. Though you know, I will say he Prince had the whole bat dance thing, but again, Adam West did it first with the Bat-2-see. It's
pure West.
Yeah, that line it just never gets old. No matter how many times I see it, it's just he was such a special individual. And, you know, I think before Affleck, correct me if I'm wrong on this, anybody, but I think he was the tallest actor to play Batman before Affleck assumed.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah,
I believe that.
He was 6'2", to my knowledge, and Affleck is actually 6'4". So Jordan, how are we doing with those questions? You got them?
I've got them now. I was just letting you finish up.
All right, so there you go. We learned that Adam West was the second tallest Batman in the interim while Jordan was finding those questions. All right, Jordan, let's go. Let's see what
Alrighty, well, we've got two questions from our buddy Steven, and speaking of which, can we announce when Steven's gonna, or not when, but what Steven's gonna be joining us to talk about?
We don't know when that is yet, but go ahead. I know Zaki, just so you know, he's dying to announce his next part, so let him get it out of the way. Go ahead, Jordan.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, like Adam said, we don't know when this is going to be airing yet, but Steven will be joining us to talk about Smallville, which is my favorite TV show, so I can't wait to have him on for that. Steven and I have been having a quite a long discussion on Facebook recently about Smallville, so I'm really excited to have him on to come on the show and talk about that. And Adam, I got to say, you were the one who brought up Smallville this episode, so I was not up until now. I didn't mention Smallville this
episode. Oh, yeah, I did bring up Smallville. Damn it, I should have known better. I knew it was going to set you off. So what's his question this week?
All righty. His first question is, do you think Superman will be part of the Shazam movie?
All right, Zaki, what do you think? Do you think we're going to see Henry Cavill appear at all in the Shazam film?
If I were to guess right now, I would say no. I don't see the point in them making a movie where they right out front they are forcing a comparison between Shazam and Superman. I mean, I could see that happening down the line since it is a shared universe, but I think they'll hold that in their back pocket.
I think for me, I get where he's coming from, because I did like that sort of mentorship that happened in that Superman Shazam short from a couple of years ago. I totally enjoyed that, and I did enjoy his battle with Black Adam. But what Zaki brings up is a good point, in that the characters are so similar, you know, and why put yourself in the corner of that comparison? And also, look, let's be honest. I'm at the point where I want Henry Cavill to get another standalone Superman film.
Yep, I hear that.
Like he got teamed up with Batman. He's getting, spoilers, he comes back to life in Justice League.
No.
I know, it's shocking.
you ruined the movie for me.
It's shocking. I know. Send hate mail my way. It's all right, but so he's gonna be with teammates in the Justice League. Can we please give Henry Cavill another solo Superman film? And then maybe we'll talk about Shazam, coming in and Shazam and all that stuff. But I'm in the camp where the next time I want to see Superman, aside from November 17th, is in his own Man of Steel sequel. That's my preference. But again, if he does for some reason show up in Shazam to do that whole mentorship thing, I'm not going to walk out of the theater by any means. Because anytime I get to see Henry Cavill Superman, I think it's good. So, but if I had my brothers, let's keep him for Man of Steel 2 or Superman.
And kudos for using the word brothers. So
yeah, I always try to use that whenever.
Extra credit for that.
Thank you. Jordan, what is your take on the Superman Shazam question?
Well, I'm with you in that my first priority for Superman in the DCEU right now is a Man of Steel sequel, because Henry Cavill deserves that, and I really want to see that movie. But in terms of him also showing up in a Shazam movie, I don't think the chances are particularly high. I think that there's a fair chance that he will, but I think more likely than not he won't. Like you, Adam, I really do like that Superman Shazam animated. I almost don't want to call it a short. It's actually longer than the other shorts. But yeah, I guess I will call it the short that they did. But I think where it's actually more likely is that Superman might show up in, because we know that because Black Adam is no longer going to be in Shazam, but we know that they're also sort of pondering making a Black Adam movie. So I think that, and we've heard, I can't remember whether it was Henry or whether it was The Rock that said that at some point in the DCEU that they would fight. And so I think that actually more likely than him showing up in a Shazam movie is that if they get around to that Black Adam movie at some point, is that he would show up there. So, but yeah, I think I still think there's, for the Shazam movie, I still think there's an okay chance he'll appear, but I think more likely than not, he probably
will. I think a lot of what the question, you know, it's a fair question, but I think a lot of where it stems from is because Peter Sam, or is it, no, it's David Sandberg, right? Yeah. The director is constantly Instagramming, day one, day two, and there was one day where he had a Superman action figure aligned in the group shot with Shazam and all the other characters. So I think a lot of people are they see that and they're like, oh, is this some sort of hint? Because nowadays social media is the ultimate casting source, and it's if this guy follows that guy, it's guaranteed that he's going to be in such and such a movie. So I think that's where it's stemming from. Like I said, if that's what's meant to be, that's what's meant to be. But my preference is, give me Man of Steel 2, Superman 2, Man of Tomorrow, whatever you want to call it. Just give me another Superman movie with Henry Cavill, and no other members of the Justice. Let him have another time in the spotlight, please, because he is so good, and it's just he's so good as the character, and he deserves that. I think he's been a loyal soldier for DC films, so I think it's he deserves that second shot at the solo Superman gig. What was his other question, Jordan?
If they did cast Batman in the DCCW, who would you choose to play him?
Oh, boy. All right. Zach, I'm going to give you the hard task of coming up with an answer for that first.
You know what? I'm going to go with Ian Somerhalder, because if you guys are Smallville fans.
Yes. Smallville, yes!
Remember when he was on Smallville, that he played Adam Knight, and there was the rumor that he was actually Bruce Wayne in the Smallville universe. Do you guys remember that?
Yes.
Yup.
So that's my deep cut DCCW casting. And he'd be good.
I dig it, Zachy.
Yeah.
And you know what's funny, though, too, is that if this were to happen, and believe me, I would want it, because, look, to me, the more Batman you can give me, it's like, yes, please. Like, just keep it coming. That's why I get so excited by the idea of a Nightwing movie and I love the Bat Family, so the more of it I can get, the better. But the CW has a habit of re-employing their previous actors and actresses that they've used. So that suggestion isn't out of the realm of possibility, because he was on their network for he did the Smallville thing, and then he was a lead in the Vampire Diaries, right? So
that's right.
It's not out of the realm of possibility if Batman were to appear in the CW DC universe. And you know what? Before I give mine, you know what's funny is that I was talking about this with Jordan the other day. Is are you do you follow Arrow, Zachy? At all?
I did. I jumped ship on that. I left the island.
Okay, well, spoilers. He name dropped Bruce Wayne.
I heard about that. Yeah.
So theoretically, with the Supergirl references to Batman, I mean, they don't come right out and say Batman, but like, unless you're sleeping, you've been sleeping under a rock for eternity, you know that the references are implying Batman. So with the Supergirl references, we have. And because Supergirl's on a different Earth than the rest of the Arrowverse, we have technically Bruce Wayne exists on the Supergirl's Earth, on the Arrow Flash universe, and now the whatever Earth that this Titans show, the streaming show, takes place. So we now have what? And then if you add Gotham, there are four iterations of Bruce Wayne in the TV DC universe. Which is astounding. But my picks for a TV Bruce Wayne, if he came on the DC CW universe, you know the guy who's in Inhumans right now is Black Bolt.
Anson Mount. Yeah.
I've always liked him as an actor, and I think he'd be great as a veteran Bruce Wayne. That would be my number one pick. My number two, I really like Zachy's suggestion, so I'm gonna piggyback on the Ian Somerhalder Batman train.
Nice.
If that's ever to come to fruition. So, what about you, Jordan? What's your take?
I'm not familiar with the guy you brought up, Anson Mount. But I'm looking at him.
He was
I'm looking
on
at him right now.
If I remember right, he was on an episode of Smallville.
He was on an episode of Smallville. Yeah. Okay, let me. I am looking that up now as well.
Why did I say that?
Yeah. Well, I gotta say, Zachy, thank you so much for giving us our third Smallville reference. We're gonna have to start a Smallville drinking game for this podcast.
I'd be drunk 5 minutes in. The amount of times you mentioned Smallville, it's.
but thank you, Zachy, for mentioning it this episode. And I am looking up Anson Mount. Yes, he was. He played Paul Hayden on Small. Oh, he was Helen Bryce's ex-boyfriend. Of course,
Now he's gone nuts. It's like Christmas morning for him now.
He's also the love interest in the Britney Spears movie Crossroads. If you feel like watching something terrible.
Speaking of drinking games, that could be another one just for that movie in itself.
It could.
I'd be fine actually with either of those choices. That either you guys is brought it, up two Smallville alum. That's awesome.
Okay, is there one that you have that's not a Smallville alum?
Yes. And this is not gonna happen. It wouldn't even happen in the movies.
Don't say Christian Bale. I'm gonna slap you if you say Christian Bale.
I'm not gonna say Christian. Okay. Right, I'm not gonna say Christian Bale. This is not gonna happen. Even in the movies, it wouldn't happen. But this is an actor who probably wouldn't do. I know he's done. I think he did do it in like an Amazon show, but he would not do a CW show, I'd imagine. But this is somebody I wanted to play Batman for a long time. James Franco.
Oh, boy.
Oh, that's interesting.
Wow. That would be – that's really crossing the multiverse because that's Green Goblin playing – that would be –
Well, all the actors from the original Spider-Man trilogy are now coming over to DC, it seems. So.
Wow, J.K. Simmons, yeah, that's true. And you know, just before we wrap, there was one other name that I had that I forgot that I'm now remembering, and he's done TV ever so briefly, and that is Carl Urban.
I like that choice.
You know what? Before they announced Affleck, I was secretly campaigning. I'm like, come on. Get Carl Urban in Batman vs. Superman, but it didn't happen. But that would be my other choice. But I think that brings us to the end of the episode, doesn't it, Jordan?
I believe it does. I'll remind you again, any plugs that we got to remember to do those.
Zachy, is there anything that you have coming up or anything that you want to make our listeners aware of?
Well, I mean, given what we talked about this episode, I figure... some of your listeners might enjoy delving into the Nostalgia Theater archives, and that's a podcast that I host every month. And last year, I had Ralph Garman on as a guest, and we talked at length about his friendship with Adam West and his fondness for the Batman 66 show. And then just last month or 2 months ago, I talked to John Trumbull, who has done an oral history of Batman the Animated Series for that show's 25th anniversary, and that's another great episode, in my opinion. I think it turned out really well. So if your audience is enjoying this conversation we had, they might enjoy going into my archives for those as well.
Perfect. And where can they find you on social media if they're so inclined?
Well, my website is zakiscorner.com. That's Z-A-K-I-S corner. That's also my Twitter. That's also my Instagram. I'm also on Facebook. I am everywhere, much to some people's chagrin, but I'm pretty easy to seek out.
All right, perfect. Jordan, what's your social media?
I just wanted to say, Zachy, I listened to that episode that you did with Ralph Garman. I that was an excellent episode. So to our listeners, definitely check that out if you want to hear some more Batman.
Thank you so much.
I love that.
I'm definitely going to do that now that you've mentioned it. I'm definitely going to be on that. The first time I came into contact with you, Zachy, was because of your appearances on Batman on Films podcast.
Oh, sure.
And I'm like, I really like this guy. I'm like, I like this guy. We agree more, you know, more often than not. So I'm like, I'm digging this guy. I like this guy. So
I appreciate that.
I'm not very, confrontational, except when Jordan brings up Smallville 10,000 times an episode, but. You know, but I'm definitely going to go back and listen to that now that you guys brought it up.
Yeah, I think you'll enjoy it.
Cool. So Jordan, what about you? Where do we follow you and your Smallville rantings?
Yeah. Well, you can you can find me on Twitter and on Instagram. My handle on both is at BatFanJordanV. And I would love anybody who wants to talk about Smallville, like me and Steven have been talking about for a while now. You can come and we will have a great discussion about Smallville on social media. That would be fun. And I also want to solicit some iTunes reviews. So if you like this episode, we'd love it if you left us a review on iTunes.
And if for whatever reason you guys want to follow me, it's at Superhero Sci-Fi on Twitter. And Zaki, I just want to, again, from myself and Jordan, thank you so much for coming on. I hope you had fun doing this.
It was an honor and a privilege, and I'm grateful that you thought to include me.
And he's coming back. If you like this episode, he's coming back, and we're going to – I guess we'll spoil it. We're doing Superman the movie with Zaki, and that's going to be fun.
I am very excited.
Are we going to be talking now? See, we should have discussed this off air, but are we going to talk the extended edition, or are we going to is that the one?
I'll talk about whatever you guys lay out.
Whatever edition comes up, we'll talk about it all. But again, yeah. Thanks for coming on. We really had fun. We can't wait to have you on again in a little while, and. For everyone else, we hope you have a wonderful weekend, and we'll see you next time. So long, everybody.
Bye.